We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Steve, you were very vocal during last week's Senate Judiciary hearing on same-sex marriage, particularly for a freshman legislator. You represent Smithfield, one of the more conservative-leaning towns in the state. So to what extent are you representing the views of your constituents in being a vocal advocate for same-sex marriage?
Well, believe it or not, Smithfield, and from polls that I've had, and using the term polls loosely, people have been very supportive of same-sex marriage. In fact, far more than are against it, and that's across the board. Although people have voiced their concerns with it, I've heard from the minority position, I'll say now as well. I don't view myself, I'm humble when I'm up at the State House, but I don't look at it like I'm a freshman, you know, having been in town government and running statewide. I don't hold back with my opinion. If I've got something to say, I'm going to say it. I'm not there to be a yes man or a doormat, so.
Many lawmakers like yourself have their minds made up about where they stand on same-sex marriage, and many of the talking points during last week's marathon hearing had been made before. We're very familiar. So when there's that kind of 12-hour hearing with passionate arguments on both sides of the debate, does that really change anyone's mind?
Well, I keep my mind open, Ian, and I'd supported same-sex marriage.
I don't mean you, but what about there are a small number of senators who are on the fence and who will be decisive on this issue. So do these hearings with hundreds of people turning out, does that change any minds?
Well, now I'm smiling. That's a great question. Yeah, I really do think that there are some that may have been on the fence a little bit, and after seeing the volume of testimony and the consistency with support for same-sex marriage, and some of the there were some good arguments against it, and I complimented some people for their passion and being articulate. But then there were some arguments that just had no place there, you know, arguments that were cloaked in anger, and so I do think some may really who have been on the fence may have changed their minds.
Now, if this bill gets out of the Judiciary Committee and onto the floor, are the votes there? Do you think to pass same-sex marriage and end Rhode Island's dubious distinction as the only state in New England without legal sanction for marriage equality?
I think without question, Scott. I think the green lights will be lighting up like a Christmas tree, and I think you only see a sprinkling of red dots up there. I really believe that.
You ran for attorney general in 2010, finished second in a three-way Democratic primary. What are your plans for 2014? Will you seek re-election for the state Senate or go in a different direction?
Well, I'm focused on, thank you for asking, I'm focused on the state Senate now, doing everything I can to learn as much about passing legislation and helping the constituents in my area. Many different bills I put forth, and taxing Bryant's one that I want to make sure goes through, and I won't go off on a tangent about that, but I'm trying to help the people in my area. I'm driven, and I do have aspirations, but I don't want to talk about potential offices. I think it's unfair. I'm where I should be right now. I'm grateful to be there. I'm happy to have the public trust, and I go every day and work as hard as I can. I learn something every day, and I mean that.
You talk about taxing Bryant University, but do you mean payments in lieu of taxes, negotiating something with them, or actually forcing them to pay property taxes, which, as you know, is a difficult legal maneuver?
Well, let me give you just a quick synopsis, Scott. When I was on the council, and both as vice president, president, and then in a minority, we had attempted to negotiate with President Makeley, all to no avail. He had actually said at the time, we're not a bank, and that quote always stuck with me. At this juncture, you have every university and college in the state of Rhode Island in some type of agreement, Roger Williams, Brown, Johnson Wells, and the hospitals paying their fair share. Bryant is the last bastion of resistance, and we've asked for only enough money to offset something like $250,000 for ambulance calls and fire trucks that go up there. To this date, nothing. And there'd even been a sit-down with the president of the Senate a year ago with former Senator Tassoni to try to get President Makeley to come to the table with an offer. So the bill says, look, if you're not going to give something, you're going to get taxed at the full value of the property, which would be about $2.2 million. And if it passes, and it already came out of the House and it's going to go to the floor, I'm confident it will. So, you know, it's going to make him come to the table.
So the idea is what you're looking for is some leverage so that you can have real negotiations with President Makeley and the board of Bryant.
Absolutely, Scott. And if this bill passes, it's $2.2 million.
We see how the Senate leadership is backing a legislative package now to try and jumpstart Rhode Island's economy. This comes about 6 or 7 years after Rhode Island headed into the recession. So how would you judge the effectiveness of your chamber in taking on Rhode Island's most serious issues?
Well, I can't speak with authority on anything to do with the House, but I can tell you that I'm extremely impressed with the Senate, and I'm not blowing smoke here. It's so well-run. We talked earlier about Dawson Hodgson. I don't even look at the R's like they're R's. I look at this like it's a unified chamber.
Well, you only have five Republicans among 38 senators.
And really, and I look at them like they're colleagues, not like they're on an opposite party. The Senate president's done a lot to try to revamp the economy, the EDC, this move the needle. I'm really impressed with that. And I want to sit down with Leslie Tato. I've talked briefly to the governor about it and to the Senate president. I have her blessing. And I want to try to get some of that low-lying fruit on the regulatory reform. I think we got too many regulations. Tato is a super bright person that the governor has assigned to regulatory reform. She's looking at every regulation in the state of Rhode Island. She's about halfway through the process now. And I commend the governor for that.
If the Senate leadership was so smart, how do you think they got hooked into this infamous frittata of the 38 Studios, Kurt Schilling, providing the money for that?
Well, from a bright man like you, Scott, that's a powerful question, and I don't know. I can't speak with any authority on it. You know, it's a debacle. I'm glad it's behind us. I hope we can get out of it in one piece. I remember a gentleman on the street asked me if we had to enforce that. He wanted me to say we should default on the loan. Always stuck in my mind. Not saying we should, but it stuck in my mind.
Steve, where do you stand on the push by moderate party founder Ken Block to abolish the master lever or straight ticket voting in Rhode Island?
I like Ken Block, and I think his moderate views have a place in Rhode Island. I think he's exceptionally bright. I don't share his opinion that we need to get rid of the master lever. I think that's a minority push to try to even the playing field, to be frank with you. And I don't think we need to abolish the master
lever. Why not?
If somebody wants to go in and pull the master lever, they're going to pull it. And if they want to take the time, my late mom, rest her soul, diehard Democrat. But there were some candidates she didn't like. I won't name them. One guy for Congress. I'm not voting for him. Yet I used to have to help her because she was disabled. I'll pick his name. She wouldn't pull it. But everything else was the master lever. She knew what she was doing.
One of the things in your neck of the woods up in Smithfield is Fidelity, which really seems to have been one of the smarter economic development moves that we made. It came under Governor Almond, as you'll remember. How is Fidelity fitting into that community there?
Oh, very well, Scott. Thanks. Mr. Johnson's got more money than God, and he chose to invest it in Smithfield, and we're grateful. They've added new jobs. John Muggeridge, who we see out and around as their political spokesman, is always promoting events at Fidelity. We have a tax treaty with Fidelity. We've gotten a lot back from them. We're honored to have Fidelity. We could use another Fidelity.
Steve, the Senate has been the main obstacle to restoring the State Ethics Commission's oversight of the General Assembly. Do you think the Ethics Commission should have that oversight over lawmakers?
Well, that's a very good question. When I ran for AG, I had met with Jason Grammett and the director. He's a former admiral of the Ethics Commission. Very impressed with both of those men. And I had talked about giving the Ethics Commission a broader scope of power. Of course, everybody shudders when you do that. But I really meant it. And I haven't focused on it. I haven't thought about that. There's so much to do with getting legislation passed. But I'm open-minded to that. I think that when you have somebody watching. But then that raises the whole separate issue of the speech and debates clause, which is a slippery slope, you know, where somebody could say something. And
but this is the Senate President Teresa Pivoweed's concern. And as a result, it seems like this issue is just going sideways. It's not going forward.
Well, I don't know. I wish Ian, in this time we have together, that I could speak with more authority on it. I think the concern of getting in the middle of the speech and debate clause is an extremely valid one. Free speech is something that we saw in action the other night, same-sex marriage. You should be able to speak your mind on any issue in this country. But I think we do need checks and balances, and the Ethics Commission certainly should have broader authority. I advocated for the AG. I haven't wavered on that. I just think we need to look at how to implement it, something I'd look at in the future.
Well, how effective do you think the Ethics Commission has been? I mean, it seems like in Rhode Island we have political chicanery event after event, whether it's Central Falls, the House people. We seem to have our own wing, I guess, at the federal prison here for Rhode Island politicians. And I'm wondering, what do we do to have better enforcement by the Ethics Commission?
Well, I think that having oversight is a very sound thing. There's no easy fix to what the frustration you voice, Scott. Had I been elected AG, I'd have been hard on people. And I think Kilmartin's doing a good job on that. The Attorney General Kilmartin's doing a good job on that as well. People who commit crimes with respect to the public trust need to be really held to the fire. You're there for a short time. You're supposed to help people. You're not supposed to go in and line your pockets. But I haven't seen, I will say this, during the same-sex marriage debate, I heard a couple of different speakers talk about this conspiracy theory kind of thing. You know, these conspiracy theorists there. I'm reminded every time I hear that, I want to say, look, in my limited time in government, I haven't seen any of that. Nobody's tried to bribe me. I haven't seen any corruption. There's no black helicopters flying overhead. I'm not trying to be flip here. I don't buy into any of that. I'm not saying there isn't corruption. I haven't seen it.
Well, the only conspiracy we face here is the clock, and we're out of time. So thank you for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And thank you, Senator Steve Archambault, Democrat of Smithfield.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks, Scott. I enjoyed it. Thank you.